Greg just said a lot of nice things about me, further proving that he is an excellent liar. All right, good evening. Welcome to the Men's Ministry Evangelism Workshop on Mormonism. I am thankful to be here and have this opportunity, and I'm thankful that you are all here too. if those of you who might not know, I am Dan. I've been studying Mormonism since early in my Christian walk. My first experience with Mormonism was right after I was saved in college. I was going to a college men's Bible study, and a young man named Dan, a Mormon, visited the Bible study every chance he could. Most of the time he would come and just sit quietly and learn from the scriptures. Other times he would try to inject Mormon-specific teachings. also, please note that we are recording this. And that is for posterity's sake. I am recording it for myself, and that intent is so I can listen to myself and see where I can improve as a teacher. But I also want to let you know that if you want a recording, or if you want a copy of the notes, please just ask. But this is also a warning to you. If you speak up, we will have your voice on these recordings, which is good. I welcome questions, feedback. I welcome engagement. So don't let this dissuade you, but do know that you are being recorded. So let me give a very quick outline for the night. I want to spend much of the time in teaching and hopefully imparting some information on Mormonism to you. Then the rest of the time in the workshop portion. I want to do this in four blocks of time. I will aim for about 20 minutes of teaching and then about 10 minutes of engagement for each section, giving us just about 2 hours. Here's an outline for the night. First, I want to give some introductory materials, just about the Bible and evangelism, but then I also want to talk about the history of Mormonism. Secondly, I want to talk about the Mormon view of the Bible and Revelation and what the Mormon canon is. Thirdly, I want to talk about the nature of God in Mormonism and how that compares to the biblical God. And fourth and final, I want to address soteriology, salvation, how they believe people are saved and how it compares to the biblical message of salvation. I feel that these three things are the cornerstone of the Christian worldview and central to all evangelism, God, grace, and revelation. Those are the bedrock for all of your witnessing. So, let's jump into the first section. I want to start off with a passage in the Bible, that being Ephesians 1, 5 and 6. It says this, "In love he predestined us for adoption to himself as sons through Jesus Christ, according to the purpose of his will, to the praise of his glorious grace, in which he has blessed us in the beloved." The question is, what is our primary goal when witnessing to Mormons or anyone else? Is it to win the argument? Is it to look smart? To show off how much you might know? To slander their false prophets? To call fire down from heaven? Is it even for the other person's salvation? I would say no. Not even the last one. Although the last one is a good and godly goal, it is not, I think, our primary goal. Aim in evangelism. Our primary goal in evangelism to Mormons and to anyone else is to first and foremost glorify God. What did the Ephesians passage say? It says we are saved according to the purpose of his will, to the praise of his glorious grace. It is for God's purpose that we are saved. The purpose being the praise of his grace. We are to evangelize in order to bring people to God. We want to see God's kingdom expanding by people coming to accept his gospel and join us in praising his glorious grace. All that we do, the reason we are here, and the reason the Lord saved us, is to put him front and center, to bring him honor, and to magnify his fame through the earth. With this in mind, I think we can next ask, by what power do we do evangelism? Ephesians, again, answers this. He predestined us for adoption to himself as sons through Christ Jesus. There's actually a lot to unpack here. We see that it is all by the power of God. And that people are brought into obedience of the gospel by the power of God. It is He who predestined us. He did so to Himself. He did this through Jesus Christ. Besides simply being the recipients of grace, I don't see anything that we bring to the table here. A person's sin is so great that it's not arguments, it's not reasons, it's not impressive light shows. It's none of these things that bring people to true saving faith. It is God Himself, which means that God ultimately does the work, not us. So what does this mean practically? First is that you need not to rely on your own abilities, charisma, etc. And if you're doing so, you're not trusting in the work of God. So be in prayer when you're evangelizing people. Be in prayer for God to work. Because it's not you, but rely on His power and His grace and His truth. Secondly, that means that no matter how right or how sound or how strong your reasoning and arguments are, there is something preventing people from agreeing. And that something is sin. We need to trust God to replace the heart of stone with the heart of flesh, something we don't have the power to do. This means that we need to be patient and loving with the people that we are engaging with. Becoming more angry isn't going to win people to the faith. You're just going to end up being angry, and what fun is that? And we need to wait on God's timing to draw someone to Himself, if He even chooses to do so at all. That Mormon who visited my Bible study, I heard years later through a mutual friend that although he knew that he was intellectually wrong, he decided to stay in Mormonism for other reasons. He gave reasons such as family life or whatever, but this is actually sin working through someone's heart. You, me, us, we don't have the power to overcome that. And that's ultimately why you are facing, that's ultimately what you are facing off against. This is a battle that you are in, and this is a battle that you cannot win. It needs to be the power of God. The third thing we note out of this passage is the means of evangelism. The means of evangelism. Let's get back to the Ephesians passage. It says, through Jesus Christ. When someone is saved, not only is it not the work of the evangelist, but it's also not through the worldly means of the evangelist either. Then a good question should become, why are we even here? It's not us that does it. It's not our tools that do it. Why are we here? What's the purpose? The reason I think we are here tonight is to make us a sharper tool in the pocket of God. And that is so that we can be equipped better with the truth of Jesus Christ. We are here, hopefully, to learn better to fulfill this phrase that people are saved through Jesus Christ. That's why we're here, to better fulfill this phrase through Jesus Christ, which means for us, we need to learn to better apply the truth of Jesus Christ. The scriptures tell us that all scriptures point to Jesus, right? Every jot and tittle points to Christ. So the goal of tonight is to become better equipped with the knowledge of Christ so that when we engage Mormons, God can better use us and use the truth He's implanted in us. Learning that Mormonism is wrong is not the same thing as learning that the gospel is true. Learning that Mormonism is wrong is not the same thing that learning the biblical gospel is true. Most people who leave a cult on their own don't end up in an evangelical faith. They end up in atheism, and agnosticism. They are the spiritually abused. Most people who leave a cult end up in agnosticism. And it's more important for you to preach the truth of Christ than to slander their falsehoods. That is extremely important. It's more important for you to preach the truth of Christ than to slander their falsehoods. And this not only brings them out of error, which is what slander will do, it also brings them into the truth, which is what true proclamation and evangelism will do. So all of our arguments and all of our engagements must be rooted in the scriptures. Otherwise, who knows where the people will go when they leave Mormonism? With these things said, what then is evangelism? Evangelism, I have here, is the Spirit of God using a person of God to proclaim the Word of God to bring someone to proper worship of the Son of God. That is the definition of evangelism I'm working off tonight. And part of this means that we need to show respect to God and the fact that everyone is made in the image of God. When you slander an individual, you're actually slandering the image of God in that individual. I've heard people trying to witness to Mormons by yelling, "It shouldn't be Mormon, it should be moron." Clever, right? Or simply focusing on the moral failings of Mormon leaders. This type of thing is not an application of God's truth. It doesn't bring God any glory. So as you witness to anyone, do so with God's image and God's glory in mind. With this introduction out of the way, let me give some historical background to Mormonism. Mormonism, also known as the Church of Jesus Christ and of Latter-day Saints, or LDS, was that?
That's what they prefer.
Yeah, actually, the president just a couple months ago came out and said, don't call us Mormon, call us the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Right? They actually want to have that full title. Frankly, I'm too lazy, so Mormons. no offense, but these notes would be twice as long if I didn't do that. It is a sectarian group that arose out of the 19th century America. It is probably one of the very few homegrown American religions. You need to understand the context. Early 19th century, American pioneers were still moving west. America was a rather young nation. It was still in the throes of slavery. Also, there's a very strong revivalist spirit going on. This is the time of the Puritans, the beginning of the great revivals leading into the Great Awakening. Also, there's this philosophy going around, this zeitgeist called Restorationism. This is an argument from Christians at the time that was popular saying we need to return to a pure state of the early church. We should be like Acts. I don't think those people actually ever read the book of Acts. One day in 1820, when only 15 years old, Joseph Smith, as the story goes, was in the woods in upstate New York, and he was praying as to which church was the true church. He recalls that he was visited by Jesus, or in other tellings, both God the Father and Jesus, and in other tellings, maybe a group of angels. And they told him, depending on the account, that all churches were wrong. All the creeds are an abomination, and all the professors are corrupt. That's us. We're corrupt. Also, in many of their versions, Jesus proclaims to him the forgiveness of his personal sins and that God will work a revival through him. Then he says in 1823, a few years later, that the angel Moroni visited him while he was sleeping and directed him to go into the woods and dig up and find golden plates. Joseph visited this hill Cumorah around the same time every year for 4 years with the intent to retrieve the golden plates. Then in 1827, he finally came into possession of them. It took 4 years because Joseph had to first meet certain requirements, he said, before the angel allowed him to take the plates. Joseph then started translating the golden plates. The name of the book was the Book of Lehi, and it was written in a language known as Reformed Egyptian, known only to Joseph Smith. There are different accounts of how this happened. He either directly translated himself, like he has his pen and paper over here, and he's reading the plates over here. Other accounts says he's using a seer stone, which is you take this rock, and the Mormon church has actually released a picture of the seer stone. You take this rock, you put it into a top hat, and you put your face down, or you sit in a very dark room, and the rock glows and tells you what the translation is. Another version is him reading out loud to a friend that transcribed what he said in the other room. Other accounts have him using what's called the Urim and the Thummim to do the translation, which is not the same stones in the Old Testament. Rather, it is the crystal-like stones fastened by silver and shaped like a pair of glasses that he wore to translate these golden plates. After translating 116 pages, Joseph left town to be with his wife as she gave birth to his first son, who, sadly, passed away the next day. He left the manuscripts with a friend, Martin Harris, who wasn't supposed to show the manuscripts to anyone. But instead, he paraded them around. Look what I got, look what I got. Harris's wife eventually took the manuscript, locked it up, and hid them, never to be seen again. I would love to find that, actually. Anyone up for a trip to New York with me? In response, Joseph Smith said that God told him that this interference was foreseen, and that there was another book with the same story, just shorter and with different details, and then Smith should be able to translate off this instead. This is known as the Book of Nephi versus the Book of Lehi. And this supposedly, this Book of Nephi, is the source of the Book of Mormon. So Smith finished translating in March of 1830 and officially started and organized the Church of Jesus Christ the next month. After facing pressure, he was forced to move west to Kirtland, Ohio. Most of his followers went with him. Then in 1838, Smith was accused of banking fraud and needed to escape, so he left for Missouri. There he declared the town far west the new Zion. While in Missouri, things turned violent. A small war actually broke out between the Mormons and the non-Mormons. Joseph Smith was jailed. He was charged with treason. And this gave room for Brigham Young to gain popularity, who was another Mormon. After 4 months in jail, Smith escaped, and then he left for Nauvoo, Illinois, with many of his followers. In Nauvoo, Mormons enjoyed tremendous religious freedom. You notice they just keep going west. And many of the stranger doctrines of Mormonism arose in this time. Things such as polygamy, baptism for the dead, the eternal law of progression, and many others. It was also here that he gave the important King Follett Discourse, which was a sermon given by Smith a few months before he passed, after the death of a friend of his, King Follett, King being a first name. Then the movement started to split. He started running into internal strife, which led to Smith getting arrested. Then while in jail in the June of 1844, a mob attacked the jail to attack Smith. After some crossfire, Joseph Smith was shot, fell out of the window, and died. Due to his popularity, Brigham Young was elected the second president and prophet of the church. Then, because of continued pressure, Young believed that in order to find peace, Mormons have to continue going further west, eventually finding respite near the Great Salt Lake in what would later become the great state of Utah. Emma Smith, Joseph's first wife, stayed back in Nauvoo. One more quick thing to note before going into the breakout session. Mormonism has changed. And I don't mean that their doctrines and scriptures have evolved over time, which they have, but the LDS has largely gone the way of the postmodern. Following the culture, there has been a downplaying of doctrine and more of a focus on practical living and family life. In fact, a few years ago, a couple young Mormon ladies visited my house, and I started explaining to them their view of God. They had no clue what I was talking about. The doctrine of God, a central, foundational thing for almost every religion. She didn't even know it. So be aware, as you engage Mormons, they are not like they once were. And many don't know or care about these theological differences. And like many other postmoderns, they have no desire to discuss them. Before we break, I have some items of show and tell here. I have, and you feel free to come up here, pass it around, look at it, whatever you want to do. I have a 1970 reprint of the original 1830 Book of Mormon. There's also a Joseph Smith translation of the Bible. We'll talk more about that next. It's actually a King James that Smith changed. then I have a recent edition of the Book of Mormon. Besides that, there's another volume of Mormon scriptures. We'll talk about that. A Mormon hymn book and a second copy of what's called the Doctrine and Covenants. Now we're going to take a break for about 5 to 10 minutes, and we'll come back and continue talking about Mormon Revelation.